York.
It's 24 minutes to 11 o'clock. Really appreciate engaging with you on some of on our WhatsApp line. We'll try to get through as many voice notes as possible before the show, or you can jump the queue. You can call in at any time. 021-446-0567. Well, informal mining is back in the intention this week. Zama zamas, illegal mining, artisanal mining, whatever you want to call it. This week, a veritable diamond rush in KZN. Rumors of a diamond rush in that province, in the Kwatlati region area outside Ladysmith. People saying that they found precious stones there. And since the beginning of the week, people have been rushing to that area. There's also been a report yesterday, and as you've heard in Eyewitness News a little bit earlier, in the Northwest, police saying they discovered the bodies of 20 men. They're believed to be Zama Zamas, informal miners. They were found with burn wounds on their body. Also, there's a video going around of people that looks like they're complaining about smoke inhalation down a shaft, and it's very well believed that these two incidents could be connected. Well, Vedette Bester is a postdoctoral fellow at the Johannesburg Institute for Advanced Studies. She completed a PhD in sociology with a core focus on Zama Zama. She joins me now on the line from Johannesburg. We have the Kwatlati diamond rush. We have ongoing gold mining coming from disused mines in Johannesburg. Also on the Cape and the Northern Cape West Coast, you also have a large informal industry booming of artisanal or informal mining there. A lot of issues coming out with regarding legality, also with regard to safety of miners. But you believe it's probably time for a conversation to start opening up the industry and allowing more artisanal informal miners to benefit from the minerals that are below their feet.
Yes, thanks. Thank you, Lester, for the opportunity to talk about Zama Zamas and also for having me on your show. And I just think if we look at how big is the, let's look at figures first, how big is the illegal mining industry. So worldwide, when we talk about the ISM sector, it includes 20 to 30 million participants taking place in more than 80 countries. And for South Africa, the Human Rights Commission estimated in 2015 that 30,000 people are engaged in the sector. Yeah, so that might sound like not too many people are involved in the sector, but however, if we should consider, this figure was also calculated 6 years ago. And when we think of factors like unemployment, specifically youth unemployment and minor retrenchments, and also the poverty levels that we have in South Africa, it is... The figure is likely to be higher. And another critical element that we should take into account is the number of people who is dependent on the sector. So in 2017, the Benchmark Foundation calculated that 250,000 people are surviving on the proceeds of Zama Zama mining. So then all in all, we are looking at also a substantial number, and it's time to have a serious conversation about it.
I think so. Look, one of the very fascinating but also very heartbreaking sound bites that have come out of the Kwatlati diamond rush, or alleged diamond rush. There's still no confirmation whether those are in fact diamonds, but there was a soundbite, an interview with a gentleman on Newsroom Africa, and he had said he had found a handful of diamonds, what he pleased to be diamonds, and he sold it. And the interviewer asked him, but for how much? And he says, for 1,500 rand. 1,500 rand, what could be potentially diamonds in his hand. There's also this, the question of exploitation within this industry. So if you have business people sending people down, you know, because that's what organized crime is also about. It's not just the people who do the dirty work, it's the people who make the plans and to make the deals, and that happens in boardrooms. So there's also a level of exploitation that we need to beware of.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, if we go back to the incident that happened in Northwest earlier this week, I mean, the mining incident, the fatality there is just one of the challenges that these miners face. When we talk about the syndicates and also, like you mentioned, the organized crime and the level of exploitation, those are the matters that we need to start addressing, because whenever we're going to keep it in the dark, these incidences are going to keep on continuing.
Yeah, but can the industry be formalized? Can we get small, informal, but also well-trained and to an extent regulated artisanal miners, working hand in hand with an industry in which the South African economy is built on, and that's the minerals the minerals industry that despite the contributions to the South African economy doesn't necessarily have the most sterling reputation, especially when people are calling for more beneficiation and more benefits to mineral mining for the communities immediately surrounding these mines, and we just have to look at Marikana. Marikana started with a level of unhappiness and discontent, not only asking just for 12,500 rand as a basic salary, but also that communities around mines have not benefited from the wealth that's been dug up from under our country.
Absolutely. So back to your question about can the industry be formalized then? So first of all, Lester, we need to answer the question of what exactly then do we mean by formalization? Because formalization can be understood differently. So just to give you and the listeners an idea, many African countries have tried to formalize their ASM sectors by specifically by amending or introducing legislation. So these interventions were supposed to end the criminalization of the sector, but yet the operations in Africa are still mainly unlicensed and limited to the so-called informal spaces due to rigid policies, and then the miners are forced to stay in what we can call a bloated informal branch of a country's ASM sector. So when we are talking about formalization, we need to ask, are we talking about removing people from the informal sector to the formal sector, but yet then the formal economy cannot create enough jobs for the unemployed, let alone for those in the informal economy? Or are we talking about formalization that entails a tax registration of informal enterprises? So the issue with such an approach is that many of these informal enterprises already pay some license fee or operating fee, even the Zama Zamas, and as you mentioned, also the informal enterprises around the Zama Zama sector. But so when we are talking about formalization then, so the other case is, do we see it then as more a socio-economic developmental approach, where formalization is not being regarded as the end goal or the policy accomplishment? So let me just explain this. And this is where I did work in terms of my PhD also. So yes, it can be formalized in a sustainable manner when we talk about a formalization process that that supports the informal sector. And with support, I mean providing backing to create more self-sufficient informal initiatives. So in a practical sense, such a formalization approach may require an element of licensing for an informal enterprise to receive support, in this case, the Zama Zamas. So then support can happen in terms of training around health and safety matters or entrepreneurship training. And this can definitely be done in terms of corporate social responsibility or a mine's local economic developmental program. So this is something that I've written about extensively. And in my PhD, I developed a series of framework, a practical framework for mining companies to support the Zama Zama sector. And this can be put in place as a means for formalization. But I think just back to what you said, is most importantly is when we do engage in a debate about formalization, I think it is necessary to consider a broader context. And like you mentioned, the wider context here is to provide access to mineral and land rights. The people need access to mineral and land rights. So whenever we do embark on a formalization process, we need to make double sure that we are not creating barriers again that will exclude people from benefiting from the country. Resources.
You've spoken, you've interviewed Zama Zamas, you're interested in also what it's like underground. There's a 2017 news report. It was in the Sunday Times that detailed life underground for Zama Zamas. And there's also an active economy underground. And they, in the story, you know, like prices are also inflated because, you know, guys are spending, you know, weeks underground. I'm just going through some of these prices. This was a report in 2017. A bottle of Amarula underground costs in the region of 5,000 Rand. A black label six pack, 1,500, 1,500 Rand a six pack. A 2 liter Coke, 1,000 Rand. Meat, a steak can be as cost as much as 200 Rand. A carton of cigarettes, 1,000 Rand. It must be fascinating to know what it's like to be underground for weeks in a disused mine shaft away from, look, it must be horrible even there working for a mine company because it's dark and hot and all sorts of dangers. But without even those protections of a formalized mine industry, it must be even doubly so.
Yes, absolutely. And I think also what we need to remember is so you have Zama Zamas operating in abandoned mine sites, and then you have the ones operating in more the decommissioned or the operating mine sites. So those that do pay these prices are the ones that are involved in operating mine sites mostly. And I mean, like you say, the level of exploitation is horrendous, and that's why we also need to start looking at the sector to formalize it. And just some interesting figures, if I may. So there was a 2019 report by the investigative journal that estimated just between 2012 and 2015, so this is in 3 years, at least 312 Zama Zama miners died from mining-related accidents. So that figure only speaks to the mining-related accidents, not in terms of anything else. So, and what's also important is to note that the mortality rate is believed to be much higher because the miners do not always report these incidences because they don't always trust the local authorities. And just to add a bit more to your comment, it is also crucial to note that the mining accidents are one challenge among the miners that they face in terms of health and safety matters. So in addition, they also face a series of challenges around police brutality and violence from the syndicate. And for me, something that is crucial to take note of is the women in the sector also face challenges that are far different from the men. For example, they face sexual exploitation and sexual harassment. So it's a series of challenges that the miners face, you know, to eke out a living.
I remember that the Aurora mine tragedy, where private security essentially gunned down several miners who came up from a shaft. But David is calling. Good morning, David. How are you doing?
I'm good, and yourself?
Very good. What's on your mind? What's your thoughts?
I completely agree with Dr. Bester. I think the fact is, whether it is the sector, the Zamazama sector is legalized or not, it is an ongoing reality. So, and more so, it is clear that the law enforcement is unable to contain the illegality of it. So people will continue dying. And some of the challenges that we have, such as exploitations, do exist even in the mining industry, in the formal sector itself. So I think Dr. Bester is accurate that we need to start talking about opening up that sector, and that will assist us. I mean, this is the wealth of the people. So if we politically say the people shall share, or how best can that sharing be than this kind of opportunity?
David, our producers say that you are a former miner. You've been a miner for 7 years. What was that experience like?
Big companies are mafias. I worked for two big companies. One, the key diamond mine, and one, the platinum mine. And the truth is, there are times when there are questionable products that comes into the system, which it's clear that it comes from the illegal sources itself. I was based in Musina, and at that time when the Maranga diamonds in Zimbabwe were mushrooming, there was a time where all of a sudden we were told they recovered a large amount of diamonds from the systems, the pulleys, and so forth, which was clear that when you have the illegal diamonds, they affect the price of the legal ones. Mm. So they go to the illegal, clean the streets, and bring to their own production. So that is mafia.
David, your insight is fascinating. I just want to ask you one last question before I let you go. What is the lure of many guys, many miners who are in the formal industry, leaving the formal industry and going to work in the informal mining industry? They are, of course, have the experience, may have connections to equipment. Do you see people, you know, leaving the formalized minerals economy and taking their chances? Have you had people like that? Do you know people like that?
Not exactly, because I'm not an expert. I think Dr. Bester can advise. But what I know is the industry, the main industry, keeps on retrenching people every day. Mm. And the very same people, it's not only by choice. They are stuck. I mean, the process of retrenching people comes as a surprise. Mm. And you find that people did not really prepare for that. And when someone comes in and say, this is an opportunity, it's difficult to say no to that such an opportunity. But I think Dr. Bester can be well positioned to answer
that. David, I really appreciate you calling into the show. That's a fascinating insight regarding the nature of the South African economy and with mineral mining essentially shrinking in South Africa. You have this level of people with scales, with expertise, with access to, you know, even equipment, and they're willing to try and recover some of that income that they've lost after being retrenched, Vinette.
Yes. Thank you, David, and thank you so much for your wonderful insight into this matter. I just want to delve a bit deeper into what you mentioned about the drivers. So as part of my research, I looked at the drivers, and like David said, so retrenchments do play a role, and something that the mining companies do need to look at is the way they reskill people. So they do retrenchments, but they do reskill, but sometimes or mostly the reskilling or the skills that they obtain don't match the market outside. So then these people, the retrenched miners, are left with very limited options. And then what skill do they have other than mining? And then they turn the Zama-Zama route. And another thing that mining companies also can, you know, look at that drives the sector, when we look at the drivers, is the local economic development programs or the livelihood programs that that needs to be put in place for mining companies. So sometimes those programs aren't, you know, sustainable, and they fall flat. And then how do you put food on the table? And you turn this route. So I think all in all, you know, what is apparent is that a delicate balance is required when confronting the realities, the drivers, as well as the potential solutions that arise out of this matter. So, and also David also mentioned this, so curbing and policing the Zama-Zama mining sector should be treated with a great deal of caution. And that is not to say that it should be a free-for-all, you know. Regulation should be introduced, but in a manner that will not curb the sector yet again. And when such a space is created, the full socio-economic developmental potential of this artisanal mining sector can be explored. And then also, you know, the informal sectors surrounding the Zama-Zama mining sector.
Vinette Bester, postdoctoral fellow at the Johannesburg Institute for Advanced Study, thank you so much. Fascinating insight.